Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into the big story in the news, and that is the Iowa caucuses that are now taking place. We'll begin with David Sirota, a nationally syndicated weekly newspaper columnist, award-winning radio host, and best-selling author. He has an article at Salon that argues the intense media coverage has been incredibly expensive and disturbingly lazy. Then we will speak with a reporter on the ground in Iowa who has been covering the candidates and has spoken with prospective voters. Elise Foley, a reporter with the Huffington Post based in Washington, D.C., joins us. We will discuss how young voters are reacting to candidates trying to appeal to the youth vote and how Iowans who have been bombarded with negative TV ads are reacting to last-minute pitches by candidates who, at the end of the day, will be spending up to $250 per vote. Then finally, we will look into the significance of this relatively recent electoral phenomenon that is breaking campaign spending records and attracting unprecedented media coverage, yet has a mixed record in picking presidential winners. David Redlosk, a polling expert and professor of political science at Rutgers University, joins us. He is the author of Why Iowa? How Caucuses and Sequential Elections Improve the Presidential Nominating Process. Joining us now is David Sirota, a journalist, nationally syndicated weekly newspaper columnist, award-winning radio host, and best-selling author. He is a regular contributor to Salon, and his weekly newspaper column appears in newspapers with a combined daily circulation of more than 1.8 million readers. His books include Hostile, The Uprising, and Back to Our Future, How the 1980s Explained the World We Live in Now. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Sirota.
Thanks for having me.
And David, when you say that the Iowa caucuses, the coverage has been incredibly expensive and disturbingly lazy, expand on that, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're seeing is, look, we're living through a time where media resources are obviously finite, and they're being diverted out of reporting real news that matters to most Americans, state legislative news, municipal coverage, coverage of what's going on in the economy, war coverage. And so the same media industry that is pleading poverty and saying we need to make these cuts to that kind of coverage is also spending an inordinate amount of money covering what I think is basically a manufactured news event, an Iowa caucus where less than 150,000 people are going to vote. And they're spending a huge amount of that money in Iowa. And frankly, they're spending the money not even on reporting, on real reporting. They're spending it on what I think most people would acknowledge is punditry and stenography, that you haven't really seen much hard-hitting reporting out of the Iowa caucus. So you put it all together, and what you see is, frankly, I think a media that doesn't have its priorities straight, and and I hope that the next time that we hear media executives say, "Oh, we don't have enough money to cover the big issues of the day," everybody should remember what's gone on in the Iowa caucus and where those resources really went. They didn't disappear; they just went to a different place.
So does it strike you as paradoxical, though, David Sirota, that at a time when more and more Americans feel our politics are bankrupt, the media is celebrating it more than ever? On what you're talking about is, you didn't say it was meaningless, but it's only 150,000 people involved in this popularity context that has not really picked too many national winners since it's only been around for, 30 years at any rate.
Well, I think it is fascinating, and I think it's sad. I think it's fascinating that as cable TV has doubled down, for instance, on coverage of American politics, cable's ratings have basically gone down. As polls show that most Americans just want the campaign to be over, so much of the media is focused on the horse race aspect of campaign coverage. And I think what it says is that the habits of the media are so ingrained, the habits of simply covering the horse race, that the media, I think a lot of media institutions don't even know how to change, don't even know what to do differently at all. And let's remember that covering a manufactured news event like the Iowa caucus in the way that it's been covered, it may not be cheap, but it requires very little training and it requires very little expertise. So So in an era when you have less and less formal training in actual adversarial journalism, I think part of the reason we're seeing the focus, the double down kind of focus on the horse race aspect of politics, is because there just isn't the expertise to do real investigative journalism anymore. And that's a tragedy.
Well, David Sirota, again, journalist, nationally syndicated weekly newspaper columnist, award-winning radio host and best-selling author, regular contributor to Salon. We're talking about the press coverage of the Iowa caucuses, which is just beginning now. When you talk about the media wanting to cover process, which is what this is, a process story, and most of the reporting that comes out of Washington is a process story, isn't it also circumscribed by the media ritual of balance, where you have to have the pro side of the story, then the con side, and then you end up with a kind of meaningless mush? And there's an incapability on the part of the media to cover anything in realistic terms, for example, that doesn't have two sides. Like, for example, when the Tea Party threatened to shut down the government recently, they've done it a couple of times, as a matter of fact, that was not reported as one party sabotaging the whole works to get their way. That was treated as a process story. You know, the Republicans are doing this and the Democrats are doing that.
So, well, I think the reason that's happening, in my estimation, is because it's much harder, it takes more work to find fact, it takes far less work to simply say he said, she said. It doesn't really take a lot of expertise or a lot of elbow grease to simply say, all right, I'll get a quote from one side, I'll get a quote from the other side, and then I'll wipe my hands of it, and I won't actually find any fact. Actually finding fact, what's in a bill, whether what a candidate says is true, what do candidate proposals, what would they actually mean for the average person in America, that takes a lot more effort. And I think that we're living in an age where that effort, for many reasons, just isn't there.
But it doesn't take much effort to realize that it was the Tea Party and it led by Eric Cantor that was threatening to shut down the entire government over the tax ceiling and extension.
Well, I think then that gets to the other aspect. The other aspect is that it requires a willingness to challenge power. When you declare what is and is not fact, it may offend one or another side. It's a potential risk for the journalist, in the sense of you're becoming an adversarial journalist. You're saying this statement is not true, or this is the fact, whether the political powers that be like me stating that fact or not. To do he said she said journalism isn't really a risk of anything, and so there's definitely a risk aversion aspect to this.
Mm-hmm. So when you're covering, though, this is not a he said, she said in terms of a caucus that involves Democrats and Republicans. This is that there's no story on the Democratic side. This is a purely Republican horse race. What's your sense of whether there's any real context in the real quality or the lack of quality of these candidates? Because, frankly, some of them are ridiculous. A lot of what they say is embarrassing. None of them are particularly distinguished. And as they get more desperate, they appear even more absurd. But, you know, I'm allowed to say that kind of stuff because I'm I'm not in the mainstream media. You know?
Well, and I think, look, there are important distinctions between some of the candidates. I mean, I think there's very, very huge important distinctions between Ron Paul and all of the candidates in the Republican primary, and we haven't really seen those covered very well, because for a long time, I think the media didn't want to cover Ron Paul because a lot of the things that he was saying were, in a sense, an indictment of the bipartisan duopoly that the media has contributed to sustaining. That the media has for years, for instance, written out of the story any voices that oppose war. Ron Paul happens to be not only a voice who opposes war, but a voice who opposes war inside the Republican Party, which a red versus blue media has trouble processing. So the tragedy of it is, although I think that, Ron Paul, at least in the fact that he's surged in the polls, and we'll see how he does tonight, but the tragedy of it has been is that there are real differences that have simply been sanitized from the story. I mean, there's another candidate, Buddy Romer, is a former Louisiana governor, a congressperson. He hasn't even been allowed into the debates, and he's the guy who's, as a Republican candidate, saying we need to get money out of politics. And I would say that part of the reason he's been written out of the story is because, again, a red versus blue media doesn't know how to process any candidate, much less a Republican candidate, saying the kinds of things that he's saying.
Well, it is a bit strange, isn't it, though, David Sirota, when as much as the media tries to ignore Ron Paul and even in particular the right-wing media in the form of Fox News, yet nobody calls the rest of them to account for unbelievably reckless and belligerent statements. I mean, it's almost as if those Republican candidates can't wait to go to war against Iran. I mean, they made it real clear that they just want to bomb them right now, tomorrow. And Bachman is talking about using nukes. And I mean, isn't that wouldn't that in the real world be more of a story than Ron Paul's opposing war?
Well, you'd think it would be, but unfortunately, it fits into a meme, a storyline that the traditional political press has been more than happy to not question. I mean, you've had belligerent statements being made about Iran for years now, and it's become just part of the apparently part of the noise. That's not really much of a story anymore. Look, how we decide or how the media decides what is and is not blockbuster news, part of that has to do with repetition. I think that one of the evil genius moves of the Republicans and the conservative movement has been to simply realize that if you say something over and over and over again, that it will become normalized. It won't be treated as big or shocking news anymore.
So given, David Sirota, that we're at the beginning of this process, that's what's so extraordinary when you think about how much money's being spent in Iowa. It's apparently about $250 a vote. How do you see the rest of this year shaping up? Is it again a kind of paradox where the more bankrupt our politics become, the more money is being spent?
I think that as people become more and more disengaged, that the people running for high office are going to, frankly, have to spend more and more money. Until we, of course, change the campaign finance system. But part of the reason you see so much money going into these races is because you need to basically now harass people to even be interested in a process that most people are realizing is bankrupt. So, yes, I think there is a relationship between the citizenry realizing the bankruptcy of the process and the amount of money being spent in the process, that as the citizenry realizes the fraud that's happening, candidates feel like they have to spend ever more money to get the fewer and fewer engaged citizens to actually pay attention and care.
And in terms of the way that this Republican race has turned out so far, with a whole series of candidates being catapulted to the front runner status, and then being the balloon being pricked, and then one after another goes up and then down, it's almost like watching a merry-go-round. How much would you attribute that to the media's sort of hunger for a story? Did they sort of build them up and well, I suppose they tore themselves down eventually as reality intruded. But how would you assess that process? Is that something that's being manipulated, or is that just it's just that the embarrassing facts coming out?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's that. The public isn't happy with the candidates, and so there's a new flavor of the week, and people hope that the whatever flavor of the week is going to be the savior, and then they realize that the savior isn't perfect, and then there's a new flavor of the week. And I certainly think that the traditional media gets into the act of that. Oh, there's a new front runner, and that becomes the new story, and that's the new flavor of the week. I think it's self-reinforcing.
So out of all of this, is there anything that you, do you want to venture into any kind of punditry here in terms of what you think is going to happen and what's likely to emerge?
I don't want to predict, and I don't want to suggest what I think is going to happen. I can tell you what I very much hope that Ron Paul wins the Iowa caucus, and I hope that he wins the Republican nomination, that's not because I'm endorsing him or anything like that, but because I think he actually raises the issues that we most need to be having a discussion about in this country. Issues of American empire, civil liberties, ending wars, ending the drug war. These are issues that almost never get talked about in national politics, that we need to start having a national discussion about. And I think that if he wins tonight, and if he ultimately wins the nomination, which I realize is a long shot, but if he does, that conversation will be forced into the debate, whether the moneyed powers that be, whether the political establishment likes it or not.
Well, I suppose at the same time, some of what Ron Paul has said will also be forced into the debate. Like on Sunday, he blamed the Civil Rights Act for almost all the ills that have happened this country.
And I think it would be great to have a debate about that as well.
Well, David, I thank you for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with David Sirota, who is a journalist, a nationally syndicated weekly newspaper columnist, award-winning radio host, and best-selling author. He is a regular contributor to Salon, and his weekly newspaper column appears in newspapers with a combined daily circulation of more than 1.8 million readers. His books include Hostile, The Uprising, and Back to Our Future, How the 1980s Explain the World We Live in Now. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment speaking with a young reporter who has been covering the youth vote in Iowa.